This is Phil Farron. And I am driving around because I'm running Sound at Church again tonight for worship service. Well, I'm running Sound for worship service, practice, band, something or other. And then I'm running Sound on Sunday. We really had a lovely worship service on Sunday. It was just lovely. People seemed to be ready to enter in. And, you know, I mentioned to our music ministers that we had done those songs before, things, but it just is one of those, you know, one of those days when people were ready. And I don't know if it was because of the upcoming election, they were concerned, or what the situation was, but it was lovely. It was just lovely. So that's always fun. So all is well there. Looking forward to another good worship service practice tonight. And because of that, this may be shorter, maybe. I don't know. It just depends on how verbose I get. Anyways, all is well at work. We're puttering along. Got some good things accomplished this week. Got a little farther on what's called the service increments. Got a little farther on service awards. Just a few things here and there got taken care of. That problem that I was talking about last week, went in on Monday, and sure enough, everyone testified that it was fixed. Yay. So, there you go. Whispers. We love those whispers. So, anyways, so all of that is good. The writing is going along fine. I'm starting on chapter 14 of the book, which is about right. Books run about 15, 16 chapters will be about halfway. So the goal is to put down 75,000 words by the end of this writing sprint. And I've crested 60,000 words now, and I still have the weekend. So between tonight, Friday, and Saturday, I'm supposed to put down another 4,500 words, which I think that's doable. So that'll put me at 10,000 words for this week. That should put me at 65. And then I've got next week. And then I pull off and start working on the production version of book 9. So I think it'll be fine. It'll be fine. Book 10 is a little lighter tone in some aspects. And so that's good. Kind of mix it up a little bit. Although things are going to start picking up in book 11. So I've kind of been just floating along for a couple of books here. And just kind of taking care of a few little items of business, and then we'll get going. I had prepared some notes, and I thought I was going to talk about, does information theory support design in nature? And I'd put that together, and there were some pretty interesting things in that. And then I wanted to talk a little bit in conjunction with that about proteins and the chance that proteins would actually, a single protein would form by itself, because that's very interesting. I've seen enough people doing this one now that I think the numbers are good. We'll see. But then I came across another video about this information theory and stuff that actually had some other points, and so I thought, maybe I'll just wait on the information theory stuff and just talk quickly about chances that a protein could randomly form. Because these numbers seem reasonable in terms of calculating the probabilities, and if they are reasonable, then you got a real problem saying that, in fact, life just came about on its own. And it's interesting how people are trying to get around the fact that life just came up out on its own. Because Stephen Hawking, who's just died, of course, apparently he said that he believed that life actually arose on another planet. Okay, well, that's kind of a cop-out. That's, I mean, honestly, it's kind of a cop-out. You know, if it's hard for life to arise on this planet, you know, then I think the justification is, well, yeah, it's raining here and my wipers make a lot of noise. I think the justification there is, well, yeah, it's really hard for life to develop on a planet, but there's millions and potentially billions of planets. Therefore, yes, it's really hard to win the lottery, but if enough people are winning the lottery, you know, are playing the lottery, then sooner or later somebody's going to win. So that's how somebody's going to win. Yeah, there's a problem, though, in my mind. As soon as I heard that, I went, wait a minute, hold it. Wait a minute. Okay, somebody somewhere is going to win. There are enormous distances between the stars. Maybe we'll figure out how to traverse those distances. But in order to make the case that, well, life arose somewhere, maybe not here, maybe we're transplants, but life arose somewhere, you not only have to get past life arising, then you have to make the assumption that, in fact, we are going to figure out how to conquer physics. Because you've got to get over those enormous distances. And so you either have to have faster than light travel, which maybe is theoretically possible. You have to have some kind of machines that are constructed that allow you to shorten that distance in windfall. It's curled space funnels, they're called. You got to have something to do to where you can get people from here to there. And as near as we can tell, in lots and lots of planets all around us, there's not really any sign that there's anything else going on those planets. We haven't picked up any signals. You know, we haven't come across any weird anomalies yet, et cetera, et cetera. So, if you had a race that was sophisticated enough that it could collapse those distances to where it could make it here and transfer life, then where is everybody else? Because you would have thought that they would have done that in more than just one spot. And if they came to transfer life and they were that sophisticated, why would they just sprinkle their pixie dust to let life get started as bacteria and all that sort of stuff and then build up over time? I mean, if you've made it that far to where you're that kind of race that can do, why aren't you just colonizing as opposed to supposedly having this grow over time, over, you know, 4 billion years? I mean, so starting on another planet doesn't, getting life to start there doesn't, in my mind, absolve you from the problem. And the problem is pretty apparent when you actually start digging in. So let's go through this fairly quickly. There's a whole bunch of these out there at this point. So if you just look up something like probability of protein, you know, chance of protein, et cetera, coming. This is just one of the talks. There's a whole bunch about these out there. So here's the gig. So you've got proteins. Proteins are fundamental to life as we understand it. Proteins. So they're these string of amino acids that are all bonded together, and they're bonded together in very specific ways with specific types of bonds in specific orientations. And the reason that you need them all with those specific types of bonds and specific orientations is because when that protein is created, it has to fold And it has to fold in a very specific way. And so you can say, well, okay, so great. But maybe the machines just came about that created these proteins before there was proteins. Well, the machines that we know that create these proteins are made out of proteins. So the protein builder is made out of proteins. So how do you get the protein builder until you have proteins? And you run into all these other kinds of chicken and egg problems the more you learn about the cells and the complexity of the cells. And I've been saying for years and years and years that I thought that there might be three waves of science, that the first wave was man just making observation and saying, well, I see the world and I can make a clay model of that world and this doesn't seem that complicated, so I'm almost like God, so God must be near. And then you get into that first few levels of complexity and you realize, no, this is a lot more complicated. And so instinctively, once you start realizing how complicated it is, you push God away because God seems very powerful and intimidating. And you can't imagine that you're close to what God is anymore. And so that's kind of the second wave. And then the third wave is when things get really complicated and you recognize that there is this tremendous complexity. This, to use the intelligent design term, there is this irreducible complexity that just could not have arisen on its own. And then you do things like say, well, life must have started on another planet. Or you do things like saying, well, there must be a multiverse, because then you can get an infinite number of universes out there and an infinite number of planets, and then maybe it makes sense that life somehow stumbled into being on this planet. So proteins. You got to have proteins. As we know it, you have to have proteins for life. Some proteins are pretty small, you know, 100 different amino acids strung together in a chain. Some are big, I think 30,000 amino acids strung together on a chain. And so what the speaker was saying is, okay, so let's just say that we need a protein, a single protein, of which there's gajillions of them, but let's just say we need a single protein to form in order to start life off. And let's say it's a pretty small one. So let's just say, fine, we're going to do a protein that has 150 sites where amino acids might bind. Okay? There's 20 different amino acids. So that's basically you have 20 to the power of 150. And if you convert that to base 10, this guy said you end up with 10 to the 195th power, which is an enormous number. But you don't really know how rare usable combinations are. And so, you know, one person said, okay, we need to really figure out how rare usable combinations are. So there was this molecular biologist, did his PhD work at Caltech, worked for 14 years at Cambridge University, and he wanted to find out how rare or common are the functional sequences of amino acids among the big space of all the possible amino acids that there are. His name is Doug Axe. Okay, because he wanted to say, okay, obviously, if you have 150 slots, there's tons. I mean, there's a mind-boggling many number of combinations. So how many of those are actually useful out of this mind-boggling number? So he looked and looked and looked and looked, and what he found is it's pretty rare to get a usable one. So it's not like you can just throw a bunch together and actually get a usable one. He said it's something like 1 in 10 to the 74th power. Now, that's less than 10 to the 195th power, certainly. And so, well, that's a smaller number, but it's still a huge number. But you have a couple of other problems. So let's say that it is 1 to the 10 to the 74th power. That's your chances of getting a protein to just randomly assemble. You've got all these amino acids floating around in the soup. So to get one of these proteins to just assemble randomly in all the complexity, let's just say it's 1 in 10 to the 74th. Well, you're not quite there yet, because the way these amino acids bond to their sites, they can do it in two different ways, and you have to have what's called a peptide bond. So now, you know, you've got 150 sites, and you've got one of two ways that they can bond. So now you got to factor that in. So that factor is like 10 to the 45th, I think he said, something like that. Then you have another problem, and that is that amino acids actually come in two different versions. There's a left-handed version and there's a right-handed version, and if you get this wrong, it's not good. Seems like I remember that the problem with thalidomide that mutated babies and caused horrific birth defects is that it was a right-handed protein as opposed to a left-handed protein. There was something in there that was seemingly no big deal, but in fact, it's a huge deal because the proteins won't fold correctly. It causes all sorts of problems. Okay, so now, you got to factor that in as well. So that when you factor in the 1 in 74 chance and the 1 in 10 to the 45 chance and the 1 in 14 chance, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and you factor all these, what you come up with is 10 to the 164th power that a protein is going to form randomly. Now, that doesn't really mean anything to anybody. It's like, okay, it's 10 to 164th power, big deal. Okay, but this is what this guy says. He says, okay, he said, let's see if we can get our brains around how big that number is. He said, the estimate is that there's only 10 to the 80th power number of elementary particles in the entire universe. Mind you, the chance of this protein randomly assembling itself, one protein, is 10 to the 164th power. And in all of the universe, there is only 10 to the 80th number of elementary particles, near as we can guess. And in the entire universe, there's only 10 to the 16th power number of seconds since the Big Bang. So, you know, you start to get to the place where this 10 to the 164th power is just too much. But yet people are just like, well, it just happened. And what's interesting is this guy at the end, when he was talking about this, he said, this is what happens to me. He said, I'll be out, and I said, I'll be lecturing in a hostile university environment, and I'll get done, and someone will say, well, he said, they don't want to agree with me about the possibilities. They'll just say, well, you know, maybe it just happens by chance. And he said, I'll just shut down this discussion because I say no serious scientist thinks that it just happened by chance. He said, it's always going to be more probable that it didn't happen by chance than it did. And with that kind of real reasoning, you realize it's time to move on and look at some other possibilities besides, oh yeah, it just happened. We really don't have to deal with this. It just happened somehow. Yeah. With the probabilities, with the complexities of life, it really sounds to me like we're getting close to that third wave where scientists are going to go, okay. And then they got to deal with it some other ways. And one of the ways they floated already is the idea of the multiverse, because then you can just get a gajillion possibilities and life only happened here. But I just really don't think this thing with Stephen Hawking, well, it arose someplace else and then it made it. That just doesn't wash with me. It's going to be fascinating to watch all this happen. It's just, because it's just so wonderfully designed and so wonderfully made. It's just astonishing. It is exactly what Scripture says it is. Fearfully and wonderfully made. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it to the church. I'm going to get something to eat. I'm running sound, and then I'm going home eventually.